This is the NetGroup Investments podcast, where we explore a variety of views and insights that investors care about.
Hello, my name is Robin Johnson, Head of Investments at NetGroup Investments, and I'm joined by Tony Cousins, CIO of Perford International, the portfolio managers on the NetGroup Investments Global Cautious Fund. Thanks for joining us, Tony.
Good to be here, Rob.
So we heard a good presentation from you yesterday, and you addressed the persistently high inflation that we're seeing around the world. Is this the new normal?
Well, I think there's a few things going on. Inflation has become sticky because central banks were so slow to deal with it. The more transient elements of inflation, like commodities, have fallen out. Indeed, commodity price inflation is now negative. But because it wasn't dealt with early enough, it's found its way into psychologies and particularly into wage inflation, which is the worst type of inflation. And this is exacerbated by a very, very tight labor market.
So on that note, what's keeping the labor market tight? If a corporate surely must be laying off people. I mean, we hear about the layoffs in Silicon Valley, for example.
I think there's some weakness in the tech sector layoffs, but if you look at vacancies per unemployed person, that's still only just off the peak and at a very high historical level. And that gives the people who are looking for a job a lot of bargaining power. This isn't just in the US, this is in the UK, it's in Europe, and it's even there in Japan as well.
When you mentioned there people looking for a job. Is everyone still looking for a job, or has that changed?
Well, I think one of the sources, the short-term sources of tightness in the labour market are those people who have dropped out of the labour force. After COVID, this concept of the Great Resignation arose, whereby older workers just did not return to the labour market. And that is a significant number. And that, along with continued economic growth, has caused this real ongoing tightness in the labour market. Will they go back to work? Well, if they run out of money, they will have to go back to work. But until they do, you're not going to find equilibrium in that supply-demand imbalance of workers.
And an ageing workforce is inflationary, right?
Yes, this is the other long-term factor. We have a short-term shortage of workers, but we also are going to be facing a long-term shortage of workers. Back in the 80s and 90s, the working age population was growing above 2%. That shrank to just growth of 1%, but now that's petered out entirely. So there is no growth in the working age population, and in some countries, it is shrinking. So that is the long-term inflationary effect. The Bank of International Settlements has put together a very turgid study of this, but essentially it shows that when you have growing working age people who produce more than they consume, that's disinflationary. But when you have growing dependent age groups who consume more than they produce, that is inflationary. And that is the future for developed economies, growing inflationary pressure from higher dependency ratios.
And you mentioned yesterday that even though the aging population in Japan, we haven't seen inflation there. Why is that?
Well, Japan was the first to hit this problem, and its labor force peaked well before the other countries. So three things essentially happened in Japan. Firstly, there was a huge boom in foreign direct investment, whereby they just relocated production to areas where the labor force was still growing. And you saw a massive increase in Japanese affiliate employment in those overseas countries. So that's point number one. The second point is, and this is a very cultural thing for Japan, people just worked longer. The exit age, average age for a Japanese male worker is 68 years, which compares to just over 60 in France. And this is what the Japanese did. They realized, well, we need to work longer, so we'll just do it. I think the third thing you saw was a big growth in part-time workers, people who didn't have the ability to work full-time, and particularly in the female population, who just started going to work. And this really put off the problem for Japan. However, that sort of additional supply that they found elsewhere in their population, that's coming to an end now. There's only so much slack, and it's coming to an end. And you've seen in the annual, they're called Shunto negotiations, the highest wage settlement for many, many, many years. 3.8% doesn't sound too high by Western standards, but by Japanese standards, it is very high. And core inflation in Japan is running at 4%. So Japan was able to delay this effect, but this is now coming home to roost.
Inflation in Japan isn't as high as it is elsewhere around the world, and they haven't had to raise rates yet.
Well, they've had a very aggressive monetary policy in terms of yield curve control, trying to keep the 10-year bond yield at zero initially. They've allowed that to rise. And the question is whether this is actually sustainable, because the central bank is the only buyer of Japanese government bonds. They own well over half the market already, and that isn't a sustainable approach. Whilst headline inflation doesn't look too worrying because the commodity price gains have dropped out of the annual calculation, core inflation is. It's 4%, interest rates are far too low, and we think interest rates will have to rise and Japanese bond yields will have to rise as well.
Moving back to the developed world, what are these rapid rate increases going to do to the growth in Europe and the US?
Well, interest rate rises are ordinarily just a very blunt instrument. But when you're raising them from very, very low levels, negative in the EU, virtually at zero in other countries like the US, they are doubly a blunt instrument. And the bond market is telling you that this is going to lead to a recession. One of the most reliable historic indicators is the inversion of the yield curve. And whether you do 10-year minus 3 months or 10-year minus 2 year, the yield curve is very steeply inverted now. And for about as long as you can go back, when it's been this inverted, it has always resulted in a recession. So this is a reliable lead indicator. Other lead indicators are telling exactly the same picture. And perhaps one with less history, but I think very relevant to credit creation, is lending standards are tightening very significantly. And that is also a good lead indicator over its, albeit limited, history of recessions to come. So unless we have a remarkable change in the performance of the economy relative to these very reliable indicators, there will be a recession in the US.
What does that mean for capital markets? What's your view on equity and bond markets at the moment?
Well, bond markets are predicting a recession, but they're also predicting the conquering of inflation. And they may be wrong on that. Inflation may be sticky and stay higher for longer. And if you listen to the folks in the Fed, that's what they are saying. So the bond market is very optimistic on the outlook for inflation. The equity market is very optimistic on the outlook for everything, for inflation, which is taken from the bond market, but also for earnings. Earnings estimates are not turning down. And if there is a, you know, full-blown recession in the US, earnings will fall.
And what does that mean for returns on the equity market? Is it an attractive place to be invested now?
No, I think there's a lot of risk out there. All this would be fine if markets were dirt cheap. But they're not. If you look at good long-term indicators like the Shiller PE or Warren Buffett's favourite measure of S&P market cap to GDP, these are at very elevated levels. So there's an awful lot of optimism baked into these valuations. And should that optimism be disappointed either by persistently high inflation and or earnings declines or earnings shocks, there is a lot of risk out there. So, you know, it's not in all pockets of the market. I think tech, which has seen a remarkable recovery this year to date, is looking very, very overvalued. Obviously, a lot of hype out there about AI. AI is going to be a big thing, but is it worth paying 200 times earnings for the lead chip maker? I don't think so.
Where are the areas to be cheerful? Where are you investing in the global markets?
Well, I think the one region that you can continue to be positive about is Asia, excluding Japan. It continues to have a growing labour force. It has lower debt penetration. It has higher savings ratios, a growing middle class, and is going to see continued economic growth. It's not going to be the 8 to 10% that perhaps we've seen in the past, but it's going to be 4 to 5%. And relative to the old world, in Europe in particular, that looks very attractive. So we in the portfolio are very overweight in our equity weighting to those economies.
Okay, so thank you very much, Tony. As you always say, protect the capital first. So in the short term, still remain cautious and look to invest as and when things become more attractive from an evaluation perspective.
Absolutely. Rule number one is don't lose the money. And rule number two is see rule number one.
Thanks very much for joining us, Tony. Good to have you.
Good to see you, Rob. Thank you.
Ned Group Collective Investments is an authorised collective investments scheme manager in terms of the Collective Investments Schemes Control Act. Ned Group Investments does not provide advice on financial products and will only give you factual information. For further details on our funds and to view our terms and conditions, please visit nedgroupinvestments.co.za. Ned Group Investments, see money differently.